Hello again from this side of the internet. Welcome to the Treat Addiction Save Lives podcast. I'm your host, Zach Caruso. Thank you so much for tuning in and hanging out with us for another episode. We appreciate you being here. Today, we are coming at you with a special episode. We're talking with journalist Neri Pitani about reporting on the topic of addiction. So all you journalists and reporters out there who have an interest in this field, this one is for you guys. Neri shares insight into this really kind of new and emerging field of reporting and offers up some great advice for both new and seasoned journalists around best practices when reporting on addiction and how this particular reporting beat is growing and evolving. Neri is a senior correspondent at KFF Health News, which is a national nonprofit outlet covering U.S. healthcare and health policy. Over the past year, she's produced a series of text and audio stories about how state and local governments are spending their opioid settlement funds, and she was a 2019 recipient of the Rosalind Carter Fellowship for Mental Health Journalism. All right, now that you're all ready and primed for today's talk, let's get into our chat with Neri Pitani. You talked about this road to your particular area of journalism in the mental health and addiction reporting space. And you said that it was inspired by an experience you had dealing with a friend who was going through a mental health crisis on your college campus, and that you saw that he was struggling to receive the help that they needed. Can you tell me a little bit about the story? What was it that happened? What was it that you saw and experienced? And, you know, why did that kind of spark an interest in bringing more attention to this topic through, you know, your journalistic pursuits?
Yeah, so when I was in college, my freshman year, one of my close friends at the time started experiencing suicidal thoughts. And, you know, they were dealing with depression. And I always like to say when I tell this story, that person is doing well now. And so that is the silver lining to this. But what that experience at the time was like was very scary and very uncertain. And I was one of the only people who knew about this individual's suicidal thoughts had been confided in, and I was 18. I didn't know where to go. No one had ever talked to me about what happens if someone's dealing with a mental health crisis. What do you do? How do you help them? And then when we eventually did get to the point of asking for help from the campus counseling center, from the resources in the greater Boston area, we hit a bunch of issues, you know, issues of just logistics. How do we get there? How do we get an appointment? Insurance and costs, stigma. Will someone else see this person walking into the counseling center? And it just illuminated for me all these barriers around mental health care that I had never thought about. And therefore, I was super unprepared to handle. And so in my sort of journalism world, I started thinking, you know, is this just me? Do other people not know about this? Are the barriers we're encountering unique, or is this a system-wide issue? And it really got me interested in asking those questions as a reporter and kind of following up to see what can I learn and then what can I share with other people?
Yeah, you just talked about barriers too. And one thing that I know you talked about, and we've heard other journalists say this, I find it interesting that traditionally any reporting in this field, whether it's mental health or addiction related, it usually falls under the crime reporting umbrella. And you're usually talking to police departments. It seems like things are starting to change though. It seems like there's a little bit of a shift in how these topics are being approached and how they're being reported on. Tell me a little bit about this. What are you seeing in the field in terms of this emergence of like more focused and nuanced reporting on these topics? And why do you think that the change is so important when it comes to reporting on something like addiction?
So my initial experiences reporting on mental health and addiction were in the crime space, as you said. This is sort of traditionally where a lot of these stories have popped up because when I was a college student, I was working part-time at the Boston Globe, and I was on their metro desk where you cover a lot of breaking news. And so what happens is generally you're covering, you know, the public transit system, accident on the roads, a fire, a shooting. But a lot of times those things intersect with addiction issues, with mental health crises. I was instructed to cover a suicide story in the same way that I would cover a homicide story, in the same way I covered a major snowstorm. And so you kind of default into this role of what we call the police, we get the press release, we like write it up, and it's just something that happened. And what gets missed in that is this like step back public health lens of it's not a one-off thing that happened, it's happening repeatedly. And to a lot of folks, and why is it happening, right? We miss that. And what are the opportunities to intervene? And so I think I have seen over the course of my just short career so far, changes in people looking at not reporting on addiction or mental health crises as an event alone, but as a systematic issue. And how do we approach it? And how do we change it the same way we report on other health issues, right? And so I think there's been positive change. I think some of that has to do with education coming from providers, talking to reporters, you know, clinicians saying, hey, this is not just the one patient that I saw, but like, this is a lot of patients. And here are some of the underlying reasons that patients say they're turning to substances to self-medicate or whatever it is. And here's where I wish I could intervene. And the more we as reporters hear that from providers, we can then understand like the larger context around that one incident that comes across the police scanner.
Right, right. It makes sense. And you also, you know, you're talking about it now, but I know you've said that addiction reporting, it's a health and science topic. And also that comes along with that is a bit of a sharp learning curve. And you need some time to do the homework and kind of learn the ins and outs of everything involved in reporting on this kind of thing. So I'm wondering if you can kind of talk to journalists, whether they're established or young journalists, you know, first of all, what would you maybe recommend that someone does to go about preparing themselves? What kind of research should they be doing? What kind of conversations and prep should they be doing, you know, to be as prepared as possible?
So the first thing I want to say is that addiction is and mental health are, you know, health and science topics, and they do have a learning curve, but I don't want reporters to be scared by that. It's absolutely something we do all the time, is that we write about topics that we are not experts in. What we are experts at doing is asking the right questions, asking about resources. So reporters are just as capable of covering addiction, mental health from a health lens as they are from a crime lens or anything else. So I think all it requires is being a little cognizant of that, making sure we ask good questions, making sure we're willing to look at research papers. They can feel intimidating, but there are some great resources that can help reporters understand how to read a study. So I'll name just two. The Association of Healthcare Journalists has several tip sheets on their website about how to read a medical study. They also have fellowships, some of which I have done, that sort of walk you through reading a study and understanding the different parts. And then the second resource I'll mention is there's a website called The Open Notebook that has tons of tips on how to do health and science reporting. It's all for health and science reporters. And so you can use those to kind of understand, all right, when I get to a study, what parts do I read? What's important? What's a red flag for like maybe the study is not worth covering or not substantive, and how do I find good ones? And use that to start reading about addiction science. And then, you know, the bread and butter of journalism is asking good questions. Ask the people who are researching this topic, ask the people who are living through experiences of addiction and mental health crises, ask the doctors, nurses, PAs, others who are treating these folks, and ask them what you're not asking. What am I missing? What am I getting wrong? What do people get wrong often about this? What misconceptions have you seen portrayed in the media? And they'll be more than happy to tell you.
I love it. I want to ask you, because you're talking about some of the things that go into this kind of reporting, and I'm wondering, how's it different? So if journalists are familiar with a crime beat or, you know, local sports, something like that, how is this going to be different for them in terms of this particular field? What should they be cognizant of? What questions should they be asking? What should they be aware of in terms of interacting with patients, families? You know, what like tips and tricks have you found so far that are important to know about this particular area of reporting?
So I think two big things that are most significantly different from my experience reporting on other beats. The first is that there is a research base. So while a lot of reporting is about, you know, interviewing people and what they say, it's really important in addiction and mental health to make sure that what people say also aligns with what research and evidence says. Like, it's almost, I think of it as a kind of plus for this field of reporting, because I have something I can go back to, and, you know, decades of research and all these different papers and kind of fall back and make sure I'm understanding and following something that folks have been researching and trying to track and establishing for a while. I don't have to just go off of, you know, one person said this, the other person said this, let me show both sides. I have a base that I can go to. So I think it's important to remember to do that and to really view that as an advantage, something that we get to do in reporting on health and science that we don't always get to do in other beats. The second thing I would say that's very different in this beat, or at least a little different, I should say, is the sensitivity of the subject and what that means when you're interacting, especially with you know, members of average people. When you're talking to someone about their personal experience with a mental health crisis or an addiction crisis, I think we have to acknowledge there's a power dynamic difference between the journalist and the person being interviewed, even though I think as a reporter, I often feel like I have no power. Like, the person can walk away when I'm asking a question, but they don't always know that. And it feels like they are obligated to tell me things. So when I'm interviewing, again, lay people, this is not for like elected officials or folks who are supposed to be, you know, accountable to the public, but for a lay person, I try to remind them that like, hey, it's my job to ask questions, but if it's something that makes you feel uncomfortable, you don't have to answer it. You can tell me no. I also try to have a conversation with them about where this information might end up publicly and how it might affect them. You know, hey, if you're going on a date in the future and someone Googles you, they might find this story about you, or a future employer might find it. And I think it's super important that you share your story, and here's why I think this article can help address stigma or highlight a policy issue or whatever it is that I'm writing about. But I want you to be fully informed and make the choice that is right for you. And sometimes that means people choose not to speak with me, and so it's a hard beat. Sometimes you have to be persistent and try to find a lot of people, go through a lot of people just for one article, but I think that's important and worthwhile.
Well, and speaking of articles, I want to ask you about a couple, because you've had work that's appeared in a lot of publications, from the Philadelphia Inquirer to New York Times, but there's two I wanted to ask you about because they were really interesting. One is how ERs fail patients with addiction, one patient's tragic death. The other one was titled Uber Rides to Patient Advocates, What It Takes to Increase ER Addiction Treatment. And these were both in KFF Health News that you write for. In How ERs Fail Patients with Addiction, you write, Jameson Rybeck, who was the subject of the article, had fallen victim to two huge gaps in the U.S. healthcare system, a paucity of addiction treatment and high medical costs. You know, so you've done this ER-based reporting, you know, you're working in this field. I'm wondering, writing, you know, the writing process for the articles, what's that like? And what do you think that you've learned and discovered here about some of the gaps and issues around addiction treatment that you've seen as a journalist and that you feel need to be reported on and seen?
I always find the writing process to be the most challenging. I think it's because I thrive on the reporting process. I love talking to people. I love reading research reports. I'm sort of a nerd in that realm. So when it comes to the writing part, I feel like I have all this great reporting and research, and I've talked to such compelling folks. For example, in the story that you're talking about, Jameson Rybeck was a man who went to an ER while he was in withdrawal from his substance use, and he was given very, very limited treatment. He wasn't connected to addiction-specific resources. He was not offered any medications for opioid use disorder, and he was offered to be admitted to the hospital, but then he felt he couldn't afford it, and so he went home without any connections to care, and he ended up dying of an overdose shortly after that. And so in reporting this, I had spoken to his mother, who was just such an amazing advocate for her son. She was a person who, you know, wanted to see ER treatment improved. And so when you have that information from someone like her, I feel like in the writing, I want to make sure I do it justice, right? I want other people to understand what happened to this family and what systemic issues that highlighted and what changes could be made. Also that sort of solutions piece, which touches on the second article you mentioned about the Uber rides and patient vouchers and stuff, kind of came from the first piece reporting on Jameson's story, highlighted all these gaps. And as I was reporting on it, I had folks say, you know, we are trying to address this by doing X or by doing Y. And I couldn't fit it all into one piece, but I thought it was important and interesting to get at, okay, we know this is a big issue, but maybe there are people working on fixes too.
I want to hear more about the job too. You know, it sounds like such a fascinating field, and it's this emergent thing. You're kind of on the edge of this new thing that's being focused on and brought out to the forefront. But what's your experience been like now working and reporting in this specific field? What do you think are like the challenging aspects? What are the rewarding aspects? And I wonder what you've kind of taken away and learned so far from some of these stories, some of your favorite stories that you've written.
I think it's been really exciting to see a growing amount of attention for addiction and mental health reporting in newsrooms, in society at large. And I think some of that has to do with COVID and just a lot of folks realizing what it felt like to be isolated or anxious or depressed or all these things kind of hitting home for a lot of people. So in some ways, it's unfortunate that it took that to get a lot of attention on these topics. But at the end of the day, if people are now more invested in these issues, in, you know, reading about them and changing them and speaking about them, I think that is a good thing. And that's been reflected in newsrooms in my experience. I've always been covering these topics before the pandemic too, but now people are more interested in those stories. Editors are more interested. It is becoming like its own beat. There are more reporters who are now dedicated to covering addiction and mental health. And I think that's awesome. It's also selfishly wonderful because then I have more colleagues in this space to talk with and bounce ideas off of and talk about these ethically, you know, gray areas you run into in this reporting where, you know, can this individual consent? Should I put this information out there? How do I do this the right way? And I feel like when I started off, there were, you know, what I have had wonderful mentors and in the reporting world, but not specific to addiction and mental health. And so that seeing that change over time has been great.
Where did you start? And I wonder, because, you know, like we've talked about, you've had your work published in a lot of media outlets, both big and small, from KFF Health News to Philadelphia Inquirer, New York Times. You know, you go on your site, there's a list of places that you've been published, multimedia work. So, you know, with this being kind of a newly emerging and focused topic for journalists, where do you recommend that either established journalists who want to get in the field or young reporters, where do they look to get their stories published and seen? How do they start to build their resume? You know, should they be looking to pitch it to big outlets? Should they be doing it independently first and building a resume? You know, what would you recommend?
I think there is no wrong place to pitch a story about addiction or mental health almost because of what we were just talking about. This topic has grown so much, people are so interested that I think almost every outlet there's a way that they can be covering and may be interested in covering if the pitch is right. Generally, when I'm talking to younger reporters, I suggest like starting with local outlets just because they're going to be more receptive. You can also, it's easier to get your hands around a story in one city versus trying to cover, you know, addiction treatment in ERs across the country, which is a lot harder, but start in your city or your town and your local paper and say, you know, I found this individual with a compelling story, or here's a policy issue, or here's a solution I found, pitch that. You can also, you know, freelance, even write it for, you know, the college student newspaper or the college radio or TV station. These are issues that college students are dealing with, and at least in my experience, are even more, you know, vocal and open about. So covering it at that level is important. The people you're writing for in your school care about this. And then as you go beyond that, it's a way to sort of build up your clips at the college level, then at the local level, and move up to national from there.
That is very cool. Well, I've got to ask, we have a tradition we like to ask for advice. And so you've given a ton of fantastic advice so far, but I'm going to pose this question to you now, Aneri. What advice would you impart onto whether it's the new crop of journalists that are coming up that have an interest in this, or whether it's established journalists covering addiction and mental health? What advice do you have? What wisdom would you impart, and what would you recommend that these individuals kind of know and go forth with as they work in this field?
All right, it's two pieces of advice. I'm going to cheat. But the first one we already talked about a little bit, but I think just know that there are some differences with this area of reporting, but there are a lot of resources out there. So I think the biggest thing is just knowing to Google for those resources. You know, before you cover suicide, for example, there are established best practices and research about why not following those best practices can be harmful and increase, you know, suicide deaths. Just look into that stuff. If you Google it, you'll find it. It's just knowing that, like, hey, I should look into this. Similarly with addiction, how should I cover this in a way that's helpful? And what are the things I should avoid to be harmful? And so just knowing that, then reporters are great at finding the information about how to do something. So they just need that awareness. And the second piece of advice I will give is just remembering to be human first. In a lot of our reporting, we have to distance ourselves because, similarly to, you know, providers, we can't be connecting with every single person and feeling their trauma firsthand. It would get overwhelming. But we shouldn't let that take away from our ability to be compassionate, to be sensitive, to be caring, because the fact that people share their stories of really difficult times in their lives when they're dealing with addiction, when they're dealing with recovery, when they're dealing with stigma, suicide, mental health crises, whatever it is a privilege. And so while there's a push to, you know, get the story or get the good quote, always remember you're talking to a person and a person who is doing you a favor.
Great advice. Aneri Pattani, thank you so much for coming on and hanging out. This has been great talking to you. A thank you going out to Aniri Pitani for taking the time to sit down with me. Really cool to hear about this new field of reporting. We've got links in our show notes to all the resources that Aniri talked about today, so be sure to check those out. Hey, speaking of, did you know that we have a new website? You can learn more about the podcast. You can check out all the show notes and episodes so far in season one, and we even have a contact form. So if you think you'd be a good guest on the show or know someone who would be, you can get in touch. Check it out. It's pretty cool. Just visit treataddictionsavelives.org/podcast. One more time, that's treataddictionsavelives.org/podcast. If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, we want you to know that you're not alone. Treatment is available and recovery is possible. So visit the link in our show notes to access patient resources like our physician directory, patient and family support groups, and much more. And that is all for me today, folks. Thank you for spending some time listening today. Be sure to catch our next episode. And until next time, remember, treat addiction, save lives.